Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint. Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
I did not ask him the question that you do not ask of a rancher. I did not ask Paul Mushaven, hey, how many cows do you have? You never ask a rancher how many cows they have, right? But no, it was kind of fun. I was going to refill my cup of coffee here before we kick off this big Thursday show and ran into Paul Mushaven because he's gearing up for a trip. I'm gearing up for a trip. So I'm like, you know, running around trying to do my normal show prep, packing my remote broadcast equipment, making sure I got all the essentials, you know, like the Tatanka cigars for Vegas, extra business cards for Helena, D.C., Vegas, all the places we're going to hit over the next few days. And, oh, yeah, and then the equipment, too. And so I said, well, Paul, can you feel the sand between your toes already? Because he and Mark Wilson, you know, they're heading off to their big trip to Mexico with, I think, like 150 Montanans or something. And he said, oh, yeah. He's like, yeah, but I got a lot of stuff I got to do. You know, who's taking care of the house? Who's taking care of all the cows? And I said, oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I think all the running around I'm doing, trying to get everything ready to go travel for a few days. But it's like, man, he's got, you know, all these cows to worry about too. And so he's got guys taking care of this. He's got his kid taking care of that. And so I just kind of made the remark. I mean, yeah, as a rancher, you can't hardly ever take a day off, much less a week off, without an elaborate plan in place, because it's like the equivalent of having hundreds of kids to feed, or thousands or dozens, depending on how many cows you have. But I did not ask him how many cows he has. I just said, yeah, that's like having hundreds of kids to worry about feeding while you're trying to go a work trip. It's just a work trip to Mexico that Paul's going on. That's all. That's all it is. Just a work trip. Hey, we got a lot lined up for today's show. Thankfully, our phone lines are back up and running. If not, we got a backup plan in place. We should be getting a phone call any second now from Montana Senate President Matt Regeer. Caden, if you want to check in with Kyle Schmock or President Regeer, because I know we're also going to run into them tomorrow during our Capitol show. We're going to be broadcasting live from the Montana Capitol tomorrow. I'm wondering if they're thinking maybe they didn't have to do the update today, but we'd still like to get him on for the weekly update today, if possible, from the Montana legislature, because tomorrow, even though we're going to be there covering the legislature, it is going to be a jam-packed program. Tomorrow on the show. So anyway, maybe he's thinking that we aren't going to have him on the show until tomorrow, because I did see that he is on the calendar for tomorrow. But yeah, tomorrow, well, let me take a step back for a second. Monday is the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association's Co-op Days at the Capitol event. Great event. We're going to be previewing that event with our live show tomorrow. So we're going to have a number of legislators on the show with us. First Lady Susan Gianforte is going to pop in. That'll be fun. And, of course, our friends from MECA and some of their co-op members from across the state will be with us as well. Quick break. Back to it right after this.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, yeah, I think that's the plan. I think we're going to have Senate President Matt Regeer kick off the show tomorrow with our weekly legislative update from the Republican Senate majority. So we'll hear from him at the start of the statewide show tomorrow. Ryan Hall and the crew from MECA are putting together a great lineup for Friday's show for us. Today, though, here in just a few minutes, we're going to hear from the Democrat minority leadership in the state house. We heard from Speaker Lear with the Republicans yesterday. Jonathan Carlin, Democrat representative out of Missoula, will be with us here in just a few minutes. Okay, so And then also later this hour, Governor Gianforte is going to be with us as well. We tried to sneak him on yesterday, and then our phone lines kind of went bonkers. So we'll make up for it by getting him on towards the end of this hour of the show. In the meantime, I got a chance to catch up with Montana's United States Senator Steve Daines. And we were talking about the violence of action, all of the confirmation hearings that are, as you can see, moving forward right now as we speak to get President Trump's team in place as soon as possible. Here we go. Part of my chat with Senator Daines earlier this week.
Now, I'll tell you what, your fellow Senator Tim Sheehy really shining his first week in office.
Look, we've got Tim Sheehy. He's been all over national media, everything from Fox to CNN, talking about what's going on in California, the wildfires. I mean, if there's ever a subject matter expert in the country in terms of wildland firefighting and aerial firefighting, it's Tim Sheehy. What a moment to step into the Senate in for many reasons. And, of course, Tim is on the SAS, the Senate Armed Services Committee, so he'll have Pete Hegseth in front of him in a matter of hours. But Tim has been able to crystallize what's going on in California, the complete mismanagement of and the lack of stewardship of their lands, which has been one of the reasons you're seeing these catastrophic wildfires, where they start putting the kangaroo rat and these certain gnats habitat as higher priority than protecting life and property, the insanity of how they have mismanaged their water resources.
That's right.
Woke government. I'll tell you what, the chickens came home to roost. It's very, very
tragic. You've been calling it out for years, and now you've got additional air support with a fellow Republican senator like Tim Sheehy. Yep. Senator, we were talking about the first full week of the United States Senate up and running with Republican Senate control. Now, the Lake and Riley Act, and before that, there was Kate's Law. The Democrats would always oppose it. The media would downplay it, or they would straight up lie in their reporting about it. Last year, John Tester voted against the Democrat senator last year voted against the Lake and Riley Act. Then he flip flopped, claimed that he was supporting the Lake and Riley Act, but it never went anywhere. And yet, the Montana media covered for the guy the entire time. And yet, boom, here we go. The first full week of Republican Senate control, and you start moving on the Lake and Riley Act. And finally, some Democrats join you.
Well, there's that old saying about what a quote, moderate Democrat is. It's a senator on the floor that will vote for you when you don't need them. And that was what Schumer was doing. He takes them as endangered Democrats and let them have a free vote, but make sure that we never could get to the 60-vote threshold to actually get an outcome. And that's the political games that was going on. And tragic when you use Lake and Riley Act, which is a horrible, horrible situation of Lake and this beautiful young woman who was murdered by an illegal criminal immigrant here who was in our country. But the good news is we got the first step of that process with 80 votes last week in the United States Senate to get that to where we're at this week, which is a real good chance to pass the Lake and Riley Act. This should not be a difficult act to pass. It simply says that ICE will have the authority to detain illegal aliens who have committed theft-related crimes. That would have saved Lake and Riley's Act. And by the way, her birthday, her 23rd birthday, would have been last Friday. We passed this bill in terms of this next step in the process the day before. So that was something we could do for her family. But we've got the votes in the Senate. The American people overwhelmingly support it. Maybe the Democrats heard this loud explosion in November of an election, this mandate. We've got to deal with the chaos created by Joe Biden and the Democrats on the southern border.
There's still a lot of damage that Joe Biden can do with 6 days to go. One of the recent destructive decisions his regime made was to not take the grizzlies off the endangered species list. I've described this as the predatory policies, just like the failures of the predatory land management policies that help stoke bigger fires and more.
Last week, the Department of Interior, one of their undersecretaries, reached out to me and gave me the, quote, heads up around what was going to come out for Fish Wildlife Services and the Biden administration regarding grizzly bears. And my jaw dropped when they unpacked what their decision, the recommendation was going to be. They've rejected Montana's and Wyoming's requested delist. The science, the numbers are overwhelming in terms of why we should delist the grizzly bear, return the management species back to the state of Montana. In the greater Yellowstone ecosystem, the target minimum is 500 bears. The current best science that both liberals and conservatives would agree on is there's 1,030 bears, twice the target minimum. Up in the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem, the target minimum is 800. We have 1,163 bears. This should be a black and white, delist the bear, return to the people of Montana, and yet they gave us this nonsensical recommendation that is far short from delisting. Here's the good news. In 6 days, there's a new sheriff in town. It will be President Trump. We'll have Governor Doug Burgum, will be the Secretary of Interior. It was the first issue I brought up with Doug when he came to see me about his nomination. And we're going to be working hard here with the Trump administration to get the bear delisted. And by the way, another important role of the United States Senate is to get better judges on the circuit courts.
All right, let's hold it right there. Quick break back after this. One more minute of Senator Daines and then Democrat Representative Jonathan Carlin out of Missoula.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Hey, whether it's the news out of Washington, D.C., or whether it's the news out of our Montana capital in Helena, we don't want to just hear what the Republicans have to say. We want to hear what the Democrats have to say, too. But even a bigger picture, we don't even just want to hear from Republicans and Democrats. We want to hear from you. We want to hear from people all across Montana who may or may not identify with a political party or could care less about either political party, but you want to weigh in on the topics of the day. That's why we love taking phone calls from all across Montana and getting your messages on the Montana Talks app and more. But yeah, we started up. We did it last legislative session. We had then Speaker of the House, Matt Regeer, join us for a weekly legislative update. And now that he's a Senate president, Matt Regeer, this session, we're doing that weekly update once again. But great to have a Democrat lawmaker join us on the program. Representative Jonathan Carlin is a Democrat lawmaker out of Missoula, Montana. And by the way, we've had the pleasure of having Representative Carlin on the show in the past. I think the Democrats in the legislature were very smart to make Jonathan Carlin a member of their leadership team in the House. He's probably the most articulate, well-spoken member on that side of the aisle, at least based off of the ones that I've gotten to see and hear. Representative Carlin, the House Minority Whip, thanks for being with us.
Great to be back on, Aaron, and thanks for kind words.
Are you the youngest member of the legislature on that side of the aisle as well, or if not, you're close to it?
So I'm the youngest Democrat, but there are two Republicans younger than me, Braxton Mitchell and now Lucas Schubert. So I'm the third youngest this session.
Which is kind of funny because Braxton Mitchell, he's been there for several years now, and he's still one of the young guys. But he's one of the old hands in the legislature, you know, with term limits and everything else. Well, hey, before I throw questions your way, what do you want to talk about? What do you want to tell people across the state of Montana from, you know, the House minority perspective?
Yeah, one thing we are really, really excited about is we've introduced two property tax bills that are going to bring hundreds of millions of dollars of property tax relief by cutting the tax rate, issuing a homestead exemption, and a long-term tax credit for stability, make sure folks on fixed incomes aren't being priced out of their communities. But we really hope those are going to be bipartisan and are going to need folks to contact their legislators and say that we want property tax relief.
I'm so glad to hear both sides of the aisle talking about property tax relief. This has been such a problem here in Montana. I mean, I remember talking with, you know, friends and others back in the 90s when I was still just a kid, when I was even younger than you are right now, and people were getting property taxed out of their homes. I mean, you could have a trailer near the lake, and back in the day, working people could live out near the lake, right? But yet a lot of them have been property taxed out of there or bought out or whatever. How does your homestead property tax exemption or reduction, how is it similar or different to what the governor just proposed in his State of the State earlier this week?
That's a great question. So where it's both plans reduce taxable value of residences. But what our plan does is it gives a simple automatic $50,000 reduction in taxable value. So really simple to implement all residences. Then it couples that with a tiered rate structure so that folks get a rate cut. The people that are living in our middle-class homes, they get a rate cut. And then on top of that, we have a tax credit, actually an income tax credit, based on your property taxes paid to ensure that your property tax burden never exceeds an affordable portion of your income.
What I mentioned the State of the State address, big picture. What were your reactions, or if you want to speak on the behalf of the Democrats in the House, at least you're the minority whip there. What were the reactions you had or that you were hearing from your fellow caucus members?
I was happy to see that the governor talked about property tax reform. You know, he talked a lot about income taxes, and what I'd like to see is before we even get into the income tax discussion, I think first we need real fiscally responsible long-term property tax reform, and I hope that that's the focus of his. I mean, he also spent a lot of time talking about the judiciary, and the way I see it is our judges are publicly elected, and I want to make sure we keep that power vested in Montanans. And so I'm not sure if I agree with him on trying to politicize more functions of government, but I was happy to hear him talking about property taxes.
And, of course, some folks would say, hey, these are already highly politicized. We saw an onslaught of out-of-state money always flood into these Supreme Court elections. I've always wondered, you know, if – just like how we have a law to prevent foreigners from donating to political campaigns in America, could we have something that prevents out-of-state interests from dumping money into Supreme Court elections, for example, here in Montana?
You know, it's something that, I look into any proposal that we see, and the way I see it is I'd love to see less money in politics and elections altogether. But, you know, I think my kind of guiding principle in all this is how can we keep the most power vested with my constituents, whether that's in judicial races. And, again, I'd love to see more money come out of politics. Is I think all of us are so sick, all the TV ads and the mailers. I mean, something's got to change.
So you're from Missoula. You're a lawmaker representing Missoula. You were talking property taxes. You know, Democrats basically run the city of Missoula and the county now as well with the elected county commissioners. Property taxes collectively just went up with the city and the county by around 20%. As a Democrat, are you frustrated by Democrat leaders in Missoula that have raised property taxes so significantly, especially since the bulk of property taxes are truly done at the local level?
You know, I think that our local government folks are in a bind, though, because we got to pay our cops and our firefighters. We need to make sure that those folks can afford to live here. And we've had high inflation the last several years. And so, you know, if we want to be living in a society where we can pave the roads and pay our essential workers, we got to pay for that somehow. And they're really hamstringed when it comes to, you know, they're solely relying on property tax. And that's where I think at the state level, I mean, we're running huge budget surpluses. And so at the state level, I think we have to partner with our local governments on real solutions so that any time local government needs something, they're not having to keep on relying on levies, which are going down in a lot of the state. You know, voters are just taxed out. Meanwhile, the state's got a $1 billion surplus.
You talk about the big surplus the state of Montana has. So the Republican majority cut income taxes and provided property tax rebates last session. They cut income taxes in the 21 session. They cut income taxes again in the 23 session. And yet, as you just pointed out, big budget surplus. So it seems like those tax cuts are really good for continuing to bring in revenue for the state.
Well, I mean, I'm thrilled that we're seeing strong revenue coming in, but what I will say is that when I knock doors and I talk with my constituents, they're not saying, you know, I'm really happy about that income tax cut. What they're saying is, I want property tax reform. And so I think that some of the tax cuts we've seen in the past from the Republican majority were misguided and didn't really bring the most relief to the middle class.
What were some of the points of agreement? I was kind of listening and a little bit watching the governor's State of the State address, and there were a few times when the Democrats also joined the Republicans applauding some of the remarks. If I remember right, one of them was, what did the governor announce? Was it $100 million more to boost teacher pay in Montana, especially pay for our entry-level teachers? For decades, this is where Montana has really been very bad about paying entry-level teachers, while other states in our nearby region have been better about that.
Yeah, that was a real area of bipartisan agreement. both a teacher pay for entry level teachers, but also we want to retain teachers is so that, you know, if they want to buy a house, have a family, they don't feel like they have to move, just because, you know, in a lot of states, even more experienced teachers are also making a lot more. So I think what we need is across the board, really investing in our public schools so that we can keep retain and or recruit and keep really good people.
Let's see, a couple more minutes to go here, and I don't know if we scheduled it yet or not. I know we were talking about doing it. I think we're going to try to get you or somebody on to do a weekly legislative update from the Democrat side of the aisle as well. So I think we're moving forward with that. If so, I hope so. That'll be a nice addition.
That would be great. I'm happy to be here every week unless I got a bill or something. So I'd love that. Thank you.
Yeah, that's right. We can always, just like we do with Senate President Matt Regeer, if it's like, oh, man, at 9 I'm tied up, well, I can always chat with you earlier in the morning and then have it ready to roll, the audio ready to roll here at this time every Thursday or so. So, yeah, well, we'll keep moving forward with House Minority Leader's staff to get that on the schedule with our producer, Caden. I appreciate that. A couple more minutes to go. It's not, you know, there's been a lot of attention on the rules debate amongst the state senators in Helena. So we didn't hear a lot of coverage about the House rules, but apparently there was a difference in opinion with the Democrats and the Republicans on the rules moving forward in the House as well, right?
Yeah, there was. We had this week a rules issue, and essentially what the Republican majority passed on party lines, they put a rule in place that would allow the Speaker with a majority vote to expel a member regardless of any prior offenses. When I say expel, I mean they wouldn't be allowed in the House chamber. They're not allowed to debate bills. And our party really believes in free speech, and we tend to believe that just because somebody says something that offends you, that you disagree with, that maybe you even feel personally attacked by it, you should listen to that person, let them speak, and, you know, frankly, not engage in this cancel culture that we're seeing. And so we were pretty disappointed that the Republican majority is choosing a more draconian approach to rules, but we will work with it either way.
So they've always had rules in terms of, you know, kind of limiting what you can or cannot say about another member, but you're saying that that this would go even further to make it a little bit easier to permanently expel somebody, basically, right?
It gives a lot of discretion to the Speaker of the House. So it has a system of, like, warnings, of a warning, and then you're censured, then you're expelled. But then it also allows the Speaker with the majority vote to go all the way to full, you know, you have lost your privileges on the House floor. And what could trigger something like that is, and I'm quoting from the rules, indulging in personalities or impugning motive. And so what one person might find impugning a motive could be very different than what another does. And, you know, we're debating highly controversial issues. And my view is, you know, I think we should all, you know, we're all grown ups. We can all hear stuff that we don't like and say, gosh, I really disagree, but it's your right to say it, and you're representing your constituents just as much as I'm representing mine.
Hey, Representative Carlin, great to have you on the show. Look forward to a weekly update with you as well. Thanks for your time this morning. I hope to see you at the Capitol tomorrow. Yeah, we'll be live for Friday's show from the third floor fan window location. Stand by.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordlund.
Groups like the Farmers Union and Farm Action are applauding the Federal Trade Commission's lawsuit against John Deere over the right to repair. The commission alleges John Deere is illegally driving up costs by forcing farmers to repair their equipment at authorized dealers. In a statement, Farm Action stated they applaud the FTC for taking the bold action to bring justice to farmers who have been stripped of the right to repair their own equipment. The long drives and wait times, they say, jeopardize hundreds of thousands of dollars in potential yields. Farm Action has led a nationwide right to repair campaign demanding that farmers are given the right to repair their own equipment. John Deere has yet to make a comment on the lawsuit as of this broadcast. In other news, USDA has announced the publication of an interim rule on technical guidelines for climate-smart agriculture crops used as biofuel feedstocks. It establishes guidelines for quantifying, reporting, and verifying the greenhouse gas emissions associated with the production of biofuel feedstocks commodities grown in the U.S. The rule covers three feedstocks, including soy, corn, and sorghum. It also covers climate-smart practices that could reduce greenhouse gas emissions and sequester carbon, including reduced till and no-till, cover cropping, and nutrient management practices. I'm Wayne Northlund.
serving the great state of Montana. From the peaks of the Beartooths to the banks of the Clark Fork River, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, third floor fan window location of the Montana Capitol. That's where we were at last session. That's where we're going to be again tomorrow morning. And big thanks, by the way, to the Sergeant-at-Arms office in the Capitol. Big thanks to Kyle Schmock and the Senate Majority's office for helping us to coordinate that. And then the real heavy lifting, the people that are keeping the lights on for you and keeping the lights on for us, the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association. Ryan Hall is the editor of the Rural Montana magazine, and he is putting together one heck of a powerful lineup tomorrow for the people that focus on delivering power, putting together one heck of a powerful lineup for us on the show tomorrow, live from the Montana Capitol. And then, let's see. Yeah. And then we'll be in the DC Capitol on Monday and Tuesday for the inauguration. Okay. Yesterday, we tried to get Governor Greg Gianforte on the line. He was on the line, but our phone lines went kaput. So we tried to make it happen, but anyway, we eventually got Speaker of the House Brandon Lear through Caden Studio. But either way, the governor is gracious enough to come back and join us today. Governor, we got you on today. Thanks for being patient with us.
Well, Aaron, it's good to be with you.
You know, it's great to have you on the show today, but you know, I got to let you know, we're having an even bigger guest that's going to join us tomorrow on the show, First Lady Susan Gianforte. So you're going to be upstage tomorrow.
Well, I'm used to being the opening act.
That's right. That's right. She's the closer. That's for sure. Well, and she's got some exciting news about her, book initiative with Dolly Parton and more. So we're looking forward to seeing her. You guys just had kind of like a big inaugural ball the other night, too, didn't you?
We did, and that was to benefit the Dolly Parton Imagination Library. Susan's going to talk to you about it tomorrow, but I'm so proud of her. She's worked her tail off, and we now have almost one out of two kids in the entire state that are eligible getting monthly books in the mail free of charge. And I would just say if there's people out there that have grandkids or kids that are under the age of five, go to imaginationlibrary.com. Sign them up. The first book you get is The Little Engine That Could. And Susan's raised all the money for this, rolled it out statewide. She's got about 26,000 kids on the program already.
It's absolutely incredible and how affordable it is and how efficient the program is. And they're all, I had one of our listeners, we were talking about it a while back, and one of our listeners reached out and said, hey, my kids are using this program. They're good, wholesome books that you get too. So you're not going to get any crazy, whoa, what are they trying to put in front? It's good, wholesome books that they're putting right in front of your kids.
Yeah, and I would say I announced this at the inaugurational ball. Your wife, Jessica, was there.
Yeah.
Dolly is coming to Montana next summer.
That's so cool.
This is going to be a fundraiser for the Imagination Library. And she's going to be in Bozeman at the Ellen Theater in August. And we're looking forward to getting more details to you on that.
All right. Well, I got a chance to listen to and watch a good chunk of your State of the State address. And everywhere from, you know, cutting our income taxes once again, property tax relief with this homestead rate cut for Montana homeowners, $100 million to boost teacher pay. And then you're also looking to back the blue, provide more support for law enforcement as well. I got to tell you, though, my favorite line, what I thought was the best line of the entire night was when you called out this, you know, partisan mob that has the majority on our Montana Supreme Court and talked about fairness and transparency in our elections as well.
Well, we passed good common sense legislation, but this court is, nonpartisan in name only. Just take this most recent Supreme Court race that we had. The ACLU out of New York put over $1 million into that race. The trial lawyers have been dumping money into this. For what reason? To elect judges that will do their bidding. And we need to put an end to it. We need to shine light into the darkness. And so our proposal, which I asked the legislature to do, and they've got the bill now, this would make these judicial elections, it would require the candidates to declare their party affiliation. They are partisan. They act in a partisan way. The people of Montana deserve to know the worldview of their judges.
Yeah, well said. And I played that excerpt yesterday. You know, our phone lines went wonky, so we didn't get to hear from you directly. But I played that clip from the State of the State, and it was just completely on point. So just a few minutes ago, I was chatting with the House Minority Whip for the Democrats in the Montana House of Representatives. And, you know, he was talking about this big budget surplus that we've got once again in Helena. And I said, well, yeah, isn't that interesting? I mean, you know, the governor and the Republican majority cut taxes in the first session. They cut taxes in the second session. Now the governor wants to do it again. And it just begs the question, if we allow people to keep more of their money and it helps bring in more revenue to the state capitol in Helena, why don't we do more of it? It's working.
Yeah. Newsflash, Aaron. It's not the government's money. It's the people of Montana. And that's what's happened. We had the highest income tax rate in the Rocky Mountain region. We cut it from 6.9 to 5.9. My budget proposes lowering it again to 4.9%. That'll be the rate that most people pay. That's $850 million every 2 years that'll stay in the pockets of Montanans. I think they know how to spend it better than government does.
That's right. That's right. I definitely want to hear more. I know it was kind of fun watching you. I think this was last week. President Donald J. Trump down in Mar-a-Lago hosted all of the Republican governors for dinner. I think 20 or so of you attended. The others had, you know, their own inauguration ceremonies, or they would have been there as well. I guess before we talk about any other topics, we got to see a lot of your remarks on the air, but it was kind of fun. You were like the MC for the whole event, the whole press conference, as Ron DeSantis started sparring and calling out one of the liberal reporters there. But what can you tell us about some of your off-air conversations?
Well, we were honored to be there at the invitation of the president-elect, 22 governors. And our mission there was very simple. We've spent 4 years in the desert without any communication from the federal government. We've fought with them at the EPA. We've fought with them at BLM. We've fought with the Forest Service. We've fought with their woke policies. We've dealt with runaway inflation. We've dealt with an open border policy. And the president was very clear. He said, hey, you guys have been getting it done. In fact, in his words, he said this to Peter Ducey, who did a little interview just one-on-one with the president and 22 governors. He says, they've got 22 governors here. It's like, they're not exactly like chopped liver. And what he meant was we're getting it done at the state level. And what I liked, what I heard from the president is that his cabinet picks, many of whom I know and have worked with in Congress and as governor, they're going to collaborate with the states. They recognize that we are the chief executives of our states. And they're there to work alongside us. And we've had nothing but opposition for 4 years. So anxious to have President Trump sworn into office next Monday, but even more excited with these cabinet picks. Doug Burgum from North Dakota is going to be running the Interior. Mm-hmm. We're going to get this a bunch of our land use issues straightened out. Lee Zeldin at EPA, I served with him in Congress. Brooke Rollins, she's going to be Secretary of Ag. I've been in a Bible study with her for the last year or so. I see her almost every week. Christy Noem, Homeland Security, I texted her and said, hey, Christy, congratulations. Oh, by the way, if you need a little barbed wire, we have some extra here in Montana. I'll send it down to you.
That's great. Yeah, because I was going to say, because some of these guys, like Doug Burgum, before he was governor of North Dakota, just like before you were governor of Montana, both of you were successful in the tech industry and in the private sector. And so that's the type of experience that's really helping to you know, usher in all the success that you're seeing in a lot of these red states. You were there when President Trump was president his first term, and then you've seen the train wreck that's been the Biden administration the last 4 years. Governor, if you can, I see I got to take another quick break here. Do you want to join us for the rest of the hour? Or do you got to run?
Sure, I can join until the top of the hour.
Okay, perfect. Great. Okay.
I can stay till the top of the hour.
Okay, perfect. All right. Yeah, because I, you know, you got to see how successful Trump was in his first 4 years in office. But everybody is acknowledging that he has spent the last 4 years preparing for this next 4 years. And it's going to be a totally different ball game. He's going to be able to hit the ground running in a much bigger way than before. And so I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on what you anticipate, what you see on the horizon, and now having the ability to work with the administration in Washington instead of them working against us like you've seen these past 4 years. So we'll start there next.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
He was in Congress for the first 4 years of President Donald J. Trump, and then he's been governor for this 4 years of Joe Biden working against us. Governor, what do you think about the next 4 years? Heck, what do you think about the next 10 days? I think we're going to see some remarkable things coming out of the Trump administration right out the gates.
Well, when I had dinner with the president last Thursday, he shared with us that once he gets sworn in on Monday in Washington, D.C., he's not going back to the White House. He's not going back to the executive office building. He's going to a little side room in the Capitol, and before he leaves the Capitol complex, he's going to sign 100 executive orders. This man is ready to get to work.
And he'll have a team with him, too. I mean, Senator Dayne, Senator Sheehy, the Republicans in the Senate seem very unified to ensure that he's going to have a team hitting the ground running. So great to see. You know, we talk about, look at how well the Montana economy, wage growth, number of businesses created just in 2024 alone. Look at how well red states, especially red states like Montana, have been doing. And now to have an administration that isn't working against us, it's going to be really, really fun to watch what happens here in the years ahead. You know, some of those key industries where we're seeing job growth is in our outdoor industry, in our gun industry. And next week, I think we'll see you at the SHOT Show in Las Vegas once again, the world's biggest gun show.
Yeah, this is I'm looking forward. I get to the SHOT Show every year. Montana is going to have a big presence. We have many of our premier vendors exhibiting. Montana will have a booth as well. We have eight up-and-coming Montana producers of firearms and ammunition in the Montana booth. We're going to have a reception. I mentioned to you off air, we have 23 companies already RSVP'd for our reception. These are 23 firearms and ammunition manufacturers who are considering moving operations to Montana. So this is a sales pitch that we put on. I called a CEO in Arizona just this week. He had purchased a bunch of land, was ready to build a complex, and the local city commission decided they don't like gun manufacturers. So he's looking for a new home. We're putting Montana's best foot forward. I'm proud of the fact we have more firearms and ammunition manufacturers per capita than any other state in the country, and we think we ought to have more.
I'm so excited to get back there, too. I'm already getting messages from, you know, fellow veterans and entrepreneurs across the state who I've seen in the past. Hey, we'll see you at SHOT Show next week. But then I just got a message from a friend earlier this morning. I haven't seen this guy since we did AAU wrestling on the High Line in the 1980s. He's like, hey, are you going to be at SHOT Show? So that's going to be a ton of fun. But I also, you just reminded me, I need to reach out. There's a guy who... He was in business in Minnesota. He's an Air Force veteran. He now moved his businesses to Billings, Montana. And it was because he heard your pitch at the SHOT Show 1 year ago. And now he's already doing business in Montana.
Well, we want these businesses to come here because they create good paying jobs in advanced manufacturing. We've also made it easier. You know, as you know, for career military, we've now exempted 50% of their military pensions. If they continue to work, we want them to come and make Montana home. We're strong. Our communities are stronger when we have more veterans here. And our freedoms are stronger when we have more firearms and ammunition manufacturers. And I'm proud of the fact, in spite of the headwinds we've gotten out of Washington, D.C. over the last 4 years, we've had the second fastest wage growth in the entire country over the last 4 years. I think, as I said in my State of the State, America, the ideal of America, the American dream, lives here in Montana. And one of the things, messages I'm taking to Washington is this country could learn from what we've done here in Montana to get back to our roots.
House Bill 121, it passed second reading in the legislature yesterday, according to Nonstop Local. I believe it's up for third reading today. This is the bill to protect women and girls in their safe spaces. It was so great to see every single Republican stood together, stood united, voted in support of this bill. I think a big part of it is you had some powerful remarks about that very topic in your State of the State on Monday.
Well, I don't think it's that complicated. I mean, men shouldn't be in women's restrooms, showers, or prisons, period.
Kind of how it's always been. It's just common sense, right? Yeah, it just makes sense. There's no controversy here. And the big mandate.
There shouldn't be.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Governor, it's great to catch up with you, as always. I'm just about out of time. I'll be on the third floor fan window location of the Capitol tomorrow. We've got a really big guest named Susan coming to see us. If you want to drop by and say hi, it'd be great to see you as well.
Okay. Well, I will see you in Washington, D.C., and I'll see you at the SHOT Show, and then we'll see you back in paradise.
So you'll be at the inauguration, too. Okay. I didn't know if you were going to make it for that. So, yeah, we'll look forward to seeing you there. Tuesday, if you're still around Tuesday, we'll be doing the live show from Congressman Zinke's office on Tuesday morning as well. All right, Governor, great to catch up with you. Thanks for your patience after our technical snafu yesterday and for joining us once again here today. Hey, if you're in Helena, you don't need to be a legislator. Anybody, come by, see us, say hello. I'll try to sneak you on the mic as well. Third floor fan window location. Thanks to our friends from the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association for lining it up. So much.